The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The voice of the people. News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. The most dangerous media outlet in the state of Colorado. Peter Boyles in the morning on 710, KNUS.
Still dark, but can see some dark purple and blue in the east. There will be a sunrise today, 2 days before Christmas. I'm Randy Corporan here on the Peter Boyle Show at 7:03. And we did pass the winter solstice on Saturday, so every day will start getting longer now, all the way back to the middle of summer. And as somebody who found a little time for some Harley riding yesterday, I personally am very excited about that. We will go to open lines here in a little bit, 303-696-1971 tomorrow. Really looking forward to talking to my buddy Trevor Loudon. He will be in Colorado in January for a very special event. We'll talk a little bit about that, plus get his unique take on things. And Jenna Ellis, a former fill-in host here at 710 KNUS, constitutional attorney, Centennial Institute, Colorado Christian University, focus on the family, is now a legal assistant to the president. And she just took down some CNN hosts. And we're going to play a little bit of that later in the show today and then have her on tomorrow to talk about the amazing work she's done. Man, has she rocketed up to the top of the game. But right now, always love connecting with a good friend from Tea Party Patriots, Bill Pasco, our Washington, D.C. insider. And Bill, it's just amazing how the Democrats, under absolutely the worst conditions and circumstances you could imagine, a roaring economy, a record fundraising for Republicans and the president, a president who just punches him in the mouth every time he turns around. So many desperate things, along with a weak, thin, partisan impeachment, and they just keep coming. They just keep slugging. And that's a lesson that Republicans have been slow to learn.
Well, you're right. Absolutely. Democrats come to power. Well, I think it's not so much how to say this. For Democrats who believe in government, one of the defining characteristics that makes a Democrat a Democrat is that they have this faith that government can be the benevolent actor. You know, when you or I are having a discussion about a public policy problem that we think we need to address, I know certainly I do, and in my conversations with you, Randy, you have indicated, you've made clear to me that you feel the same way. The first thing you think about in terms of a potential fix for any public policy problem is the private sector. How can private individuals or how can the private sector address this problem? But for liberals and Democrats, their first thought is how can government address this problem? And that's, in my mind, that's one of the key defining characteristics that defines the difference between the two parties. You and I think of the private sector. Democrats and liberals think of the government sector. And so particularly when they get in office, when they get in power, when they get in control, like they are in the House right now, their will to power, their will to use the levers of government, is natural to them in a way it is not to us. And because of that, they will always turn first to government. That's what they do.
But this radical leftist base and now, you know, trickling into really control of the Democrat Party, there used to be a Democrat Party that, while they did believe in government control and government control of money and redistribution of wealth, all of those historic things, there was still some sense of fair play. For instance, the prior impeachments. prior impeachments were managed and handled in a way that both sides had fair access to documents and witnesses, had the time that they needed to present or defend a case, had the proper representation of the person under indictment or impeachment, you know, present during and throughout the process. And all of those rules have been just simply thrown by the wayside. And I think it's a matter of pure desperation. The lefties have very little to offer. They know they can't beat this president in 2020. And so they've got to try and do something to chip away at the increasing popularity and to keep the media and a lot of people anyway from covering all of the positives that have occurred under this president.
Well, you're right. You go back to Al Green, Texas Democrat, who said back in May on MSNBC, he said, I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, then he will be reelected. That's just, it's laughable. It's so shocking how bold-faced he was. He made no bones about it. Why are we trying to impeach him? Because if we don't impeach him, he's going to get reelected. The House prosecution of this impeachment from the beginning has been a one-sided affair. You're absolutely right. It's unlike any impeachment we've seen before. It is the first impeachment in history where every vote to impeach the president came from the opposite political party, and not a single vote to impeach the president came from the president's party. In fact, the bipartisan nature of the vote, if you want to say there was one, was the vote to oppose impeachment, where every Republican who cast a vote and two Democrats joined to oppose impeachment. We've never seen that before. This is exactly what Hamilton warned about in Federalist 65, when he talked about his fear that at one point in the future, impeachments would be determined more by the relative strength of the parties than by the evidence of guilt or innocence. And that's exactly what we have. It was a purely political exercise. Everybody knows it. The only good news that we can say about it is that having done the impeachment on so partisan a basis in the House, it's going to be very difficult for the Democrats to scream bloody murder about what's now about to happen in the Senate. And that is very likely a similarly partisan split and a rejection of the charges from the House.
And yet the Democrats, they never stop. There is no recognition in their conversation now that this will move to the Senate, most likely. There's no acknowledgement in their conversation about how they handled the House side of actually voting the articles of impeachment. Instead, now they will pound the fairness, unfairness, partisanship debate. I mean, they're so good at this, and they never, ever stop. I don't think it sells anymore. The record fundraising for the president, the polling numbers continuing to climb, plus all the palpable success on the ground that everybody can feel as we head into the holiday season here. But just as a matter of strategy, they are uniquely radicalized and consistent, and people just need to understand it for what it is.
Well, you're absolutely right. They're seeing it, and we're seeing the fact that people are seeing this reflected in the polls. Independents, in particular, do not appreciate this. You know, and the independents are the ones you really got to look for. President Trump enjoys historic approval levels among Republicans. He's in the mid-90s. You typically don't get that ever. I mean, you don't get 90% of any group to agree that the sun rises in the east. But he's got approval levels among Republicans in the mid-90s. Among Democrats, his disapproval is a mirror image. He's in the high 80s among Democrats for disapproval. And so the difference in those swing states, and your listeners should keep in mind, anytime they hear about a national poll, remember, one in eight people in a national survey is from California, and that's going to end up skewing the survey. And when we elect presidents, we don't elect on the basis of a national poll. Anyway, we elect on the basis of 50 state polls plus the District of Columbia. And so what we really need to do is look at the state polls in the battleground states. And what we're seeing there is independents are swinging towards the president in significant ways. A couple of weeks ago, we had two different polls came out the same week. One showed a 17-point swing among independents towards the president. Another showed a 24-point swing among independents. And when that happens, when you get double-digit swings among independents, you're going to get significant movement at the top of the polls, in the basic numbers in the poll. And that's what we've seen. The president is favored to defeat any one of the Democrats who's running against him in those crucial Midwestern battleground states in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the states that he won in 2016 that hadn't been won by a Republican candidate for president all the way back to 1988 was the last time it happened. So those are crucial battlegrounds. The president is looking very good as we get ready to enter the election year 2020.
Talking with Bill Pascoe, our Washington, D.C. insider for Tea Party Patriots. Bill, you've been there in the swamp now for decades in campaigns, working for elected officials, just a host of different positions. As you sit here today and seeing that joke, that sleep fest of a Democrat debate, recognizing that Biden, maybe his best performance in a debate so far, which isn't saying much, continues to sit high atop the polls. Calling it today, will one of those seven people be the eventual nominee? Will it be Hillary or Michelle? Or what are you seeing, hearing, and feeling right now in the swamp?
You know, that's a great question. We've got the addition this year of something we've never seen before. There's a new variable in the mix, and that's Mike Bloomberg, a guy who's literally, since he entered the race less than 8 weeks ago, he's increased his net worth by $1.6 billion. So he could literally spend $1.5 billion and not be any the worse off than he was before he entered the race. It's a stunning, mind-boggling statistic because it looks like he may be on track to spend that much money and possibly spend that much money in the primary. He's already spent $200 million. He's already got 300 people on staff. We've never seen this kind of money applied to a presidential primary campaign before. Now, the thing that's going to be really interesting for those of us who study this as political historians, is not only is he bringing more money to the table than any campaign in history, but because of his late start, he has made the strategic decision that he's going to skip the first four contests. He's going to skip Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada and South Carolina. And he's first going to play in the Super Tuesday states, where Texas and California and a dozen other states, where 40% of the delegates will be up for grabs.
And yet he's charismatically challenged. He hasn't really even made a dent in polling yet, has he?
Well, he's in the middle single digits. I've seen him at 4 and 5. I haven't seen him at 7% yet. But it just stands to reason: if you continue to throw $50 to $100 million a week on television, eventually your numbers are going to rise. I mean, if his numbers don't rise, then he ought to be firing his advertising agency because you simply can't spend that much money on television without seeing that reflected somewhere in the polls. But you're right. He is charismatically challenged. My takeaway from his time as mayor of New York City, the biggest thing that I remember that he did was when he tried to take away the 32-ounce Big Gulp at a 7-Eleven because he knew better than you did that too much of a sugary drink was not a good thing for you, it was a bad thing for you. So he was simply going to dictate, as the mayor of New York City, that the city was not going to, nobody in the city was going to be allowed to sell a 32-ounce soda anymore. That went over like a lead balloon. But that's the kind of nanny state mayor that he was in New York City. Now, so he and his money is an interesting variable factor that we've never seen before. In fact, it is so new that I can't help but wonder. I'm going to go into the weeds for just a moment here, and we're going to see if we can educate your listeners. So when you're buying television for a campaign, a campaign for federal office, that is a candidate for the House or the Senate or the presidency, has an advantage over every other advertiser in the United States. And that is something that's a law that's written that requires, because keep in mind, laws are written by who? By lawmakers. And what do lawmakers have to do? They have to get elected. Lawmakers write laws to help themselves get elected. They do it all the time. They do it in many different ways. One of the ways that they did it in the past, still on the books, is a requirement that if you're a candidate for federal office, that is for the House or the Senate or the presidency, you get to take advantage of what's called the lowest unit rate. And that is, that means the lowest price that a TV station will charge for a TV ad, they have to give that low price to a campaign for federal office. Now, they don't have to give that price to the Republican National Committee or the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and they don't have to give that price if MoveOn.org decides that they want to advertise. And in fact, what ends up happening is because they don't have to give that low price to anybody other than a federal candidate, they end up jacking up the prices for everybody who's not a federal candidate who wants to advertise on television to make up for the lost revenue because they have to charge lower prices to people who are running for office. So I can't help but wonder, is it possible that Mike Bloomberg, being the brilliant billionaire that he is, said, you know what, I'm so determined to help defeat Donald Trump that I want to run $3 billion in advertising against him. And his media consultant came to him and said, I'm happy to place the order for $3 billion in TV ads. But, you know, if you were simply to declare yourself a candidate for president and allowed us to put that disclaimer on the ads, yeah. I'm Mike Bloomberg, I approve this ad, then you get to take advantage of the lowest unit rate. And instead of spending $3 billion to run those ads, we could run exactly the same ads for about $1 billion. You get to save $2 billion.
It's incredible.
Now, I can't help but wonder if that isn't really what's going on. Now, what I can't tell, the evidence of that would be if the preponderance of the ads he was running were anti-Donald Trump ads rather than pro-Mike Bloomberg ads. All I've seen here in the Washington bubble, and I've seen the ads on TV, but all I get to see are the pro-Mike Bloomberg ads, the ads that introduce Mike Bloomberg to the campaign.
That's all that's all we're seeing here in Denver as well, okay. And he is all over the place. So it does look like maybe, based on that philosophy, or maybe he's just trying to make it look legit, and if his poll numbers don't come up, he's going to take advantage of now being a air quotes legitimate candidate to maintain those cheap prices. That's a brilliant speculation on your part. And Bill, we are already at our first break, and I had two or three other things I wanted to talk to you on. I know your time is precious. It's holiday. You want to sit through a break, pick it up on the other side for a few, or do you need to go?
I don't know. I'll stick with you for one more segment.
All right. Very, very good. Well, let's take our break right now then. Bill Pasco, our Washington, D.C. insider for Tea Party Patriots, stays with us, and I sure hope you will, too, because I'll tell you what, we are in the midst of history-making with impeachment, election 2020, and so much more to talk about here on The Peter Boyle Show. Stay with us at 710 KNUS.
This is The Peter Boyle Show.
/7:25, sun is up, cloudy, pretty blue skies, high today in Denver of 60 degrees, 53 tomorrow, 47 Wednesday. News guy at the start of the show said he heard it might even hit 65 today, so enjoy it while it's last. Looks like it'll be cold by the weekend. I'm Randy Corporan in for Peter Boyles. Want to jump right back in with our Tea Party Patriots, Washington, D.C. insider, and my good friend Bill Pasco. Bill, thanks for holding over the break. Really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Randy.
Texter sent in to the text-to-studio line, in addition to all of that about Bloomberg, he has ties to Ghislaine Maxwell. That's the woman who's accused of procuring so many of the young women that that Jeffrey Epstein had on hand for folks. That needs to be investigated. I imagine that if Bloomberg somehow bought his way into this nomination, that Trump wouldn't hold back on any of that.
No, I think the phrase "holding back" is not in the president's vocabulary.
Right. So one of the things I've really been enjoying at Tea Party Patriots, you know, you hear all the talk, Tea Party's dead, et cetera, and it's just escalated or elevated, advanced to a much more kind of sophisticated way of doing business. And our political action committee, Tea Party Patriots Action, which is at teapartypatriotsaction.org, has set up a whole subsection of the website called Trump Defense. And it's just been fantastic. These calls we've been doing a couple of times a week with getting updates on twice a week basis from representatives from the White House. We've talked to Pam Bondi, legal advisor, other folks from Congress and from the House and from the Senate. And what you hear if you watch the news or even are dumb enough to spend time on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace is just so completely skewed and different about how the White House is operating, how the president is reacting, and what's really going on across America with regard to this impeachment nonsense.
Well, you know, I think, first off, you're absolutely right. And this is the most recent perfect example of one of my favorite riddles. And I've shared this with you before. I'm gonna share it with your listeners again, Randy. What's the difference between a Christian, a Marxist, and a journalist? And the answer is that a Christian is someone who asks us to believe that which we cannot see. A Marxist is someone who asks us not to believe that which we see all too clearly. And a journalist is someone who allows us to see that which he wishes us to believe. There is so much bias in the coverage of this impeachment, and not just the coverage of this impeachment, but let's talk about a related story. The Inspector General's report, when the Department of Justice's Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, came out, we're talking now December 9th, so it'll be 2 weeks ago this week, when Horowitz came out with his report on the origins of Crossfire Hurricane and the applications for the 4 FISA warrants against Carter Page. Remember, he's been doing an investigation for a year and a half. He came out with a 400-plus page report, and the media grabbed one top line. And their headline was, Horowitz says FBI was correct to launch investigation of president.
Yeah, no bias. No bias.
Yeah.
No political bias, yeah.
You know, and I remember seeing that. Now, I was reading the coverage before I'd had a chance to get my hands on the 434-page report and go through it myself. And so I was kind of dumbfounded. I thought, wow, really? The guy spent a year and a half investigating this, and what he came out with is, yeah, the FBI was, they were properly predicated to launch this, and that's the story in 434 pages? Then I started reading it, and I realized, okay, they missed the lead. They buried the lead. The media thinks that the story here is that the FBI was proper in its decision to launch an investigation. The far more important point is the investigation and how they conducted the investigation. And 17 different occasions, major errors, omissions, inaccuracies, 7 in that first FISA warrant application itself, and then 10 spread over the next 3. And each one of those mistakes happened to be a mistake that fell towards the government and away from Carter Page. Mistakes happen in the government all the time. And one of my axioms that I have leaned on for almost the 40 years that I've been doing this professionally is, if you're ever given a chance to explain a screw-up, and one of your options is simple incompetence, go for simple incompetence, because 95% of the time, it's simply a matter of incompetence on the part of the government bureaucrat. But there is that 5% where it's not just incompetence, it's deliberate. And when you have not one, not two, not 10, not 12, but 17 mistakes, you begin to wonder, is that really just incompetence?
And they all tilt one way. And on Saturday morning on my show, Bill, I broke up a bunch of the Attorney General Barr interview with Martha McCallum. And he's so calm, cool, speaks in such a down the middle, straight arrow way. But he says very important things if you pay attention to the details. And so it is very clear that, of course, he knew the information that was going to turn up in the IG report. But it's very, very clear to me that through his pit bull prosecutor John Durham that they are going down all of these individual trails toward the unbelievable amount of illegality and political bias, to put it mildly. Ted Cruz yesterday was played on Maria Bartiromo's show and just talked about and said unequivocally that he believes people will go to jail. He certainly hopes so.
Yeah. Yeah. This is truly a shocking report. And I will confess, I have not finished. It's a 434-page report in the middle of impeachment.
Yeah.
I hate to sound boring, but this is how I'm going to be spending my Christmas break, is taking the time. Now that I'm going to have a few days off before we come back to the Senate and the impeachment trial, I plan to finish the IG's report. It is fascinating reading. I've got to tell you, and you got to read the details. You got to read the footnotes.
Yeah, highlighter and stickies in hand, so you can return to them over time. It's very, very important. Let's cover one last topic. And again, I want to remind everybody, if they want to know what's going on with the impeachment, obviously we're not doing any calls now over the next week or two as we get through the holidays. But TeaPartyPatriotsAction.org, TeaPartyPatriotsAction.org, and then /Trump Defense. And it's just amazing when you start looking at the other side of the story. I wrote an editorial that was printed in our online newspaper, statewide newspaper, called the Colorado Sun. And the title that I gave it and that they kept was, Cory Gardner Will Do the Right Things, Acquit President Trump, and Win in 2020. And you can imagine the pushback that I immediately got when that thing started to circulate a bit, not so much from the lefties, but from folks on the right. Cory Gardner, you know, he's not conservative enough. The crappy Liberty score. He doesn't vote well. And all of these different things. And my philosophy for the last several months after watching this president perform, my philosophy has been that everything that I thought I've been fighting for the last 10 years, you know, air quotes, free market economics, primarying average or squishy Republicans and all of that, is completely off the table, because we truly are heading into 2020 in the fight for survival. America will become the socialist, or start heading down the socialist road that all of these Democrat candidates are now admitting publicly in their debates and their public events, or we will continue and give this president another 5 years to continue to strengthen almost every aspect of our country. And so for this particular election, this particular point in history, incumbency wins 90%+ of the time. Cory Gardner's voted with the president 90%+ of the time, a host of other reasons along the way. But most importantly, this president needs a Senate majority and a House majority for his second term. And for me, regardless of where you are on the political right, that should be the focus as we head into 2020.
Couldn't agree more with you, Randy. This truly is one of those defining elections. The choice is very clear. You know, and we say, as campaign operatives, we say elections are about choices and campaigns are about contrasts. And I can't think of of a campaign in my lifetime where the contrast is going to be so stark and so clear. This is not going to be a nuanced election. This is not. Both of us want to raise taxes, and the argument is over whose taxes we're going to raise by how much. This is, one side wants to raise taxes on everybody to pay for unbelievable new government spending programs. The other side wants to cut taxes further, because it knows that cutting taxes further does two things. One, it stimulates economic growth and the creation of new jobs and makes our economy more dynamic. But the second thing it does is it acts as at least somewhat of a brake on government spending, because that's the problem that we really got to address in the second term of a Trump administration, and that is we've got to have a full-out assault on federal overspending. What the two bills that they just sent to the president for his signature last week.
Outrageous. Ridiculous. Insane. But Democrats and Nancy Pelosi are in control of the House. Donald Trump's focus is to make our military the most indomitable force in the history of the world and continue to you know, have this economy generate more revenue, expand, bring up wages for lower wage earners, all of the great things that are happening. But I'm with you. After this reelection, then it is back to business as usual, including looking at appropriate primaries of certain Republicans and especially clamping down on the spending. I hope like hell we can convince the president after he's reelected that government shutdowns are a net plus for Republicans typically come election time and not a net negative. But right now in this political climate with impeachment and all the other insanity that's going on, we need to join with Republicans who are 95% aligned and together and in support of this president.
Absolutely right. Stakes could not be higher. Cory Gardner is going to have a difficult reelection, but I think he's going to come through. You know why? Because I've seen John Hickenlooper.
That's right.
Oh, goodness, how did y'all ever elect that guy in the first place? Every time he opened his mouth, in the few debates that I saw him in, when he was pretending to run for president, I was amazed at how poorly he came across. I thought he was supposed to be a successful governor. Successful governors don't become successful unless they have an ounce of spark in them.
He's been exposed. He's got ethical considerations that are going on, and the ethics committee that's investigating him has put off actually holding the hearing because they claim that they can't find a room suitable in the entire state, city, whatever, in order to hold this hearing before April. So they're giving him a pass until after the primaries. And then once he's the nominee, at least the Republicans, Cory Gardner and others, are going to be able to, you know, really run with those ethics charges, I'm sure. But it is a remarkable thing to watch Democrats and the media cover for their favored sons and daughters. And it is no more greatly on display than right here in Colorado. In fact, you know, I published this editorial in the Colorado Sun, and I was looking at their social media. And I have not seen my editorial retweeted or posted on their Facebook page, but all kinds of, you know, left-leaning policies, left-leaning success stories, left-leaning concerns. It's just everywhere. And those of us who are doing what we do and continuing this fight have to understand that even though it's what we seem to see all the time, that is not where the American people, the manufacturing base, the blue collars, the people who believe in freedom and our Bill of Rights and all of those things, that's not where we are. And we're not going to let them convince us otherwise.
Well, you know, if Hickenlooper has ethical problems, it occurs to me that that's the kind of stuff, a negative campaign based on his ethical problems to make sure everybody in the state, all the voters in the state, understand about his ethical problems. That is a particular communications exercise, a political communications exercise that is best engaged in not by Cory Gardner, but by another senior Colorado Republican Party official. You always want to try and let somebody else carry a negative campaign so that the campaign itself can stay positive. And it occurs to me your state party chairman, Ken Buck, is a former federal prosecutor, perfectly credentialed to carry the negative message on ethics about John Hickenlooper. So that, politically, I would say, as we're sitting here in December, 11 months before the next election, I would say that sets up nicely strategically for Senator Gardner.
Well, and Ken Buck and our state Republican Party get a lot of flack, much of it well-deserved from years past, but I have seen a whole lot of changes and focusing on grassroots activities and using their social media platforms, their email lists, and all of that to get out important messages. But I will make sure the next time I talk to Ken that I remind him of that very sage advice. He probably knows it already, but it doesn't hurt to hear it. We'll do the bitch slapping and let I'm going to get in trouble for that. We'll do the aggressive exposing of ethical concerns and let Cory Gardner share his record of success here in Colorado with his constituents. And, Bill, with that, we've got to wrap it up. I know you've stayed a long, long time, too.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Randy. Have a great Christmas and a wonderful New Year.
Yep, we'll be in touch. Thank you so much. Bill Pascoe, Tea Party Patriots. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Randy.
All right, 18 minutes to go now until 8 o'clock. And, boy, I don't want you to forget about tonight at the Centennial Gun Club, 5 to 8 p.m. tonight. Peter Boyles will be there. I'm going to sneak over there probably 5:30, 6 o'clock myself with great deals on accessories like speed loaders, magazines, private instructions, cleaning accessories, targets, you name it, stocking stuffers or main serious presents. For that person, you just haven't quite figured out what to get. And so go to CentennialGunClub.com/Peter, CentennialGunClub.com/Peter for all the details. Hope to see you there tonight right off of Arapahoe Road in Centennial. Randy Corpin for Peter Boyles at 710 KNUS.
Download our free mobile app and listen to 710 KNUS on your phone or hear us at home or at work on your Alexa device. Details at 710KNUS.com. Message and data rates apply. We now return to the Peter Boyles Show.
Hey! 7:49, coming up on 10 minutes to go until 8 o'clock. Randy Corpin here for Peter Boyles. And much like early morning radio hosts, financial planners almost never sleep, even though it is the day before Christmas. And Amy's here. So let's talk to Amy from Alpine Planning Group. Good morning. Hi, Amy.
Hey, good morning, Randy. I like it.
No sleep for the no rest for the wicked.
You got it. You got it, right? So, well, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you friend. I don't believe we're actually calling in for the report tomorrow. So next time we do, Christmas will be over for another year. But anyway, taking a look at the numbers.
Is the market open tomorrow?
It is a half day, okay. And so we've got phone service tomorrow, but not normal office hours.
Very good.
If the market's open, we're open is the way that we look at it. But currently we've got the Dow up 105 points. I've been watching it for the last 5 minutes or so, and it just keeps kind of steadily ticking upward. We just broke triple digits yet again. S&P is also positive by 4, NASDAQ up by 15, and I don't think it's a big surprise at this point, Randy, that it's been a banner year for the S&P 500, especially up over 27% in the 2019 calendar year. Right now, basically we're just seeing this rally persist. The headwinds, as we say, in other words, tensions with China, obviously the impeachment, although it's still a lead story, seems to have kind of taken a backseat financially, which is a good thing. And so markets continue to run. I think what's critical, though, is just obviously making sure that you've always got risk management built into your portfolio. Brian and Gabe and I have been saying for quite some time that we believe the right thing to do was keep our clients invested, again, as long as there is proper risk management involved. So no need to get overly analytical as we approach the Christmas holiday. But, again, it has been a very strong year for stock market performance. It's all about making sure that not only as your money grows, you can protect your gains, but minimize your losses. And if anyone just wants to start the new year off right or feel a little bit at ease over the Christmas holiday with their financial planning, give us a call. Alpine Planning Group, we'll see if we can help.
What's the website, Amy?
You got it. We're at, what is our website, Randy? I don't even
know. I'll tell you what, I'll look it up.
And, yeah, right?
I'll look it up, and we'll say it on this side.
Yeah, alpineplanninggroup.com, of course. Phone number 303-843-0918.
I heard an interview with Peter Navarro, the president's top financial advisor, yesterday, almost an hour. He's very, very bullish on next year and gives a whole lot of great reasons for it. So great to talk to you. Give Brian, Gabe, our regards from the Peter Boyles Show. Merry Christmas, and I'll be here the rest of the week. So maybe we'll talk to one of you guys
awesome.
After the holiday.
I was
holiday.
Just going to ask, is it you and me holding down the fort this week, Randy?
Just you and me, baby.
All righty.
Thank you
Rock
so much.
Roll.
Alpine Planning Group. It's a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing is a matter of trust. They are prepared to earn yours. You'll find out if you call them at 303-843-0918, 843-0918. Do it today.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
All right. Time is very, very short. We're going to spend a few minutes with Dick Abramson, the owner of Centennial Gun Club, talk a little bit about the red flag, the classes that we've been doing, over there. I'm real curious whether gun sales and accessory sales have been up or down with the red flag coming, with, you know, we have the shootings and different things that seem to spur when politicians start talking again about taking our ability to defend ourselves. That seems to be a great sales pitch for people who want to make sure that they're not out there on an island somewhere. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and I'm sure he'll want to mention that tonight is the night, the big pre-Christmas sale on the night before Christmas Eve. It's from 5 to 8. 710 KNUS is putting together this event with Peter Boyle, Centennial Gun Club, and great deals on accessories like targets and private instruction, magazines, cleaning tools, speed loaders, so very much more. You can go to centennialgunclub.com/Peter for complete details. centennialgunclub.com/Peter. And we'll spend a few minutes with Dick when we come back on the other side. And I know I've been promising to take calls. We will definitely do so in the 8 o'clock hour. Line them up. The number's 303-696-1971. 696-1971. And also in the next hour, I want to play some of this Jenna Ellis on CNN, legal advisor to the president now. We knew her when, fill-in host here at 710 KNUS. And she really gave an education on how you deal with surprise media attacks. She'll be with us on Tuesday, and we'll promo a little bit of that in the 8 o'clock hour as well. So hope to stay with us. 303-696-1971. Final hour of the Peter Boyle Show with Randy Corcoran here at 710 KNUS.